Welcome back, 1144, 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. And joining me once again, Washington Times reporter Rowan Scarborough. Hi, Rowan.
Hey, Andy.
Saw your front page story, Bergdahl's parents got rare access to insiders. So let me try to get a handle on this. Sergeant Bo Bergdahl goes missing, and soon after, his parents become involved in the search and rescue?
An extraordinary amount of access given to the parents during these five years. I have never heard of another administration doing something like this with anybody who was captive. And when I tried to get an answer from the Pentagon on why this was done, they just gave me a set statement, and U.S. Central Command, which organized the briefings, would not comment at all. They wouldn't even return my calls, my emails or my calls when I asked them about it. But yes, you know, over 5 years, quarterly, maybe as many as 20 times,
wow,
Bergdahls went to Army Air National Guard base in Boise and sat in on a secure video conference with all the departments in government who were involved in searching for Bergdahls. So it just adds up to extraordinary access given to this family. And the next question you wonder is, what were they told? I mean, were they cleared? Was it classified information? I could not get an answer to that question either. But the bottom line is, it was an extraordinary invitation from the Obama administration to this couple. And part of it tells me why they seem so familiar with each other when they were at the White House. You know, I'm wondering if they had, spoken on these conferences, perhaps, because they certainly did seem to know each other. And when I watched the Bob Bergdahl video that he made in 2011, when he seemed to know a lot about the Pakistani security forces and their ties to Akani, I wonder now whether, he got briefings on all of that stuff when he sat in on these things.
Yeah, and the other thing that's troublesome to me is that this is a guy, Bergdahl's father, who had expressed concern for the Gitmo detainees some time back. So, here's a guy who is a sympathizer, and yet he has access to information that could get in the way of an investigation. If it were leaked, it could cause death. I mean, there are lots of little elements here.
Sure. I mean, if he asked a question and it was answered, where do you think my son is? And then somehow that inadvertently got out, I mean, or back to Haqqani, I mean, that would make them move him, perhaps, or do something that could make it more difficult to execute his release. And we know that Bob Bergdahl was sympathetic toward the Taliban and toward Haqqani. I mean, he made statements to that effect. Now, was he doing that as an affected personality, as an affected belief, in order to get his son out? That's possible. He also tweeted support for other prisoners around the world, Christian and Muslims. So part of me wonders whether his outreach to the Taliban was done to try to get his son out and make his son a sympathetic person, or does he really feel that way? Does he really feel that we are in the wrong and the Taliban is in the right? Some of his tweets indicate that, and so I would then hope the administration would be guarded in what kind of info they gave him during these briefings. And I'll say again, the Pentagon would not even confirm that these briefings took place. And U.S. Central Command, I got no comment out of them whatsoever. So and then when I asked a spokesman for the Bergdahls, he would not comment on whether they received a security clearance to go through this thing. It would be hard to believe that there was not classified information discussed. If they're talking about the hunt for the sergeant and where he possibly is and what they've done, it seems to me a lot of that would have been classified.
Hmm. And I know that you've talked with some ex-military folks. They don't think this was a good idea at all, right?
Well, I talked to someone who's a sort of an expert. Larry Johnson was in the State Department when the Hezbollah kidnapped Western aid workers and others, one journalist at least, and he said that they never would have thought of doing something like that because it's too sensitive for the wrong kind of information to get out, which could prompt something bad. So, and he knows of besides briefing the families, you know, keeping in touch with them, he knows of no extraordinary effort like this to bring them in on secure video conferences. And so his concern in this case is that, you know, the parents could say something inadvertently or on purpose, you know, that would just muddle things. And mm-hmm. so that's why he thought it was a horrible idea. Yes, have a liaison in the Army that talks to them from time to time, sure. But to bring them in to the crown jewels of the administration and let them sit there and go back and forth with the people, the White House, State, the CIA, Central Command, that to Larry Johnson was a mistake.
Yeah. Have you heard of any comments directly from Bo Bergdahl?
There's been some press reports that he doesn't that at this time he doesn't want to talk to his family. I don't know if that's correct or not. That's about the only thing I've read so far. I mean, we know in the videos that the Akani Network released, we know that he claims he was on patrol and fell behind. Now, we know that's not true. I mean, we have so many eyewitness testimonies from his soldier colleagues that he walked away that morning before roll call. And so that's enough evidence for me that he just walked away from the FOB toward the Taliban, toward Pakistan, looking for some tribal people who spoke English. I think that's clear. What isn't clear is what was his state of mind at the time, and did he have any kind of mental condition that would make this not desertion, but some sort of mental incapacity to think straight? I think that's the big question here. How much did he knowingly know, you know, before he walked away?
Yeah.
The evidence is it was premeditated and it was thought out because of the things he left behind and the things he took with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I read a story a little while ago. It said that this is nothing new for the guy. He had walked away once before in Afghanistan and actually walked off a military base in California.
Yes. We could say he's a bit of an odd duck.
yeah.
Odd that he joined the Army and, you know, went over there to fight. You know, if he had all these feelings about, you know, what we're doing is not right in Afghanistan, I mean, what did he think we were going to be doing over there?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a counterinsurgency war where we're trying to kill the Taliban and protect the democracy that's now in Kabul. So, I mean, it seems to me he would have been better as a U.S. State Department person working in some sort of humanitarian relief or other non-governmental agencies that are over there doing humanitarian stuff. That to me would have been a much better place for him because he certainly was not at home in an infantry unit because infantry, they fight. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm. You find it strange that he hasn't talked to his parents or doesn't want to? The latest story I have this morning is that he has refused to talk to his parents.
That's an interesting story, isn't it?
And yeah.
We don't know why. We just don't know why.
Yeah.
You know, is it because of his mental state right now? He doesn't think psychologically he can connect to them? Or did he come to dislike something that they did while he was away?
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see. I mean, at some point the Army is going to have to report on what they've done for him. You know, he is in this reintegration program that the first things they do are mental and physical health before they get to any kind of debriefing. First of all, they want to bring him back, you know, to where he was before he was held a captive, if that's possible. Then they go into what would probably be what is called an AR-15-6, where they do a one-officer investigation of what happened to him, why he walked away, what happened to him. Intel people would also want to do their assessment. But here's the rub. If the Army is looking to whether to discipline him or not, then he at some point would have to be afforded legal counsel. I mean, if the one-man investigator comes in there and starts asking him questions, he's going to have to inform him of his rights, I would think, and that he has a right to an attorney. And I would think any attorney worth his salt would not want Bergdahl to answer the question of why he walked away.
Yep.
Because if he incriminates himself, then that's a leg up toward being disciplined. So the Army has got to figure out, I think almost from the get-go, what do they want to do with this guy? Do they want to find out what happened, or do they want to do an investigation that could lead to discipline? If they want to do the latter, then they're going to have to provide him or offer him an attorney, it seems to me.
Yeah.
To be fair to him. If they decide he's suffered enough and they want to get the facts, then there could be some sort of a decision made at the highest level before they began that questioning.
Well, we're going to continue to follow it. We know you will, and we will talk again. And, folks, if you haven't read this story in today's Washington Times, you need to do it. Bergdahl's parents got rare access to insiders. It's by Washington Times reporter Rowan Scarborough. Rowan, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, Andy.
11:55, 1260 WRC, Andy Parks live from the Washington Times.